think that it was a very good or bad idea, and what were the immediate consequences? Thanks. We'll be back in a minute or two.
Helping you keep your cool all summer long. AM 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ken Duffy. President Obama hoping to give the health care reform process a little push with a White House news conference tonight. Democratic leaders are out in support of the plan.
America's Affordable Health Choices Act will mean a cap on your cost, but no cap on your benefit.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi joined by Americans who lost everything to health care costs, but will the president really get his wish?
Moderate members of his own party, Blue Dog Democrats, worried about the price tag and could be a roadblock to passage of the plan by the August recess, something the president is demanding.
Fox Radio's Todd Starnes in Washington. Federal authorities reportedly raiding the office of Michael Jackson's doctor in Houston right now. Dr. Conrad Murray was with Jackson the day he died and is currently under investigation. And the Senate just rejecting a bill that would have allowed people with concealed weapons permits take their hidden guns across state lines. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Time to pay some immediate attention to the trees on your property. But who do you call? Well, for almost 30 years in this county, smart homeowners have relied on the Mancuso family's Manor Tree Company. In every season of the year, Manor Tree, based in Pelham Manor, New York, has been the preeminent tree specialist for individual neighborhood homeowners and for the discerning proprietors of the great estates of Westchester as well. Business and commercial owners also know about Manor Tree for tree removal, stump grinding, pruning, shaping, even for quality, clean-burning fireplace wood. A free inspection of your property by Manor Tree Company right now can help protect your beautiful and valuable trees all year long. We invite you to call for a consultation in Pelham Manor, 914-738-1785. That's Manor Tree Company, 738-1785. They're the best you can find in Westchester.
The power of radio comes through in good times and bad. You might say radio is a true foul weather friend during economic downturns in a weak economy. More and more smart advertisers are turning to radio. And the more local the station, the better the results. Our WVOX and WVIP creative team can craft a strong, persuasive, effective message that instantly captures the uniqueness of your company's products, goods, or services, and all in just 1 hour. Give us just 1 hour and we can broadcast your special message to thousands of dedicated listeners, good customers all over the metro area for a very reasonable investment. No cumbersome, time-consuming layouts, no artwork, no agency double talk, just a cut-to-the-chase, well-chosen, beautifully crafted radio commercial that accurately describes and captures what you're really all about. Ready to go in just 1 hour. The power of radio. Close to home, the theater of the mind in good times as well as not so good. Rely on WVOX and WVIP, the foul weather friends of business managers and owners in Westchester and the Bronx. Broadcast your message, your passion, your excitement as interpreted by some of the best commercial copywriters in the business. Call David O'Shaughnessy or Judy Fremont and tell them you want to be airborne with your own radio ads in just 1 hour. At our Westchester headquarters, 914-636-1460. The power of radio, 914-636-1460 on WVOX and WVIP.
Here's your weather forecast for the afternoon. Mostly sunny. Temperatures in the lower 80s for tonight. Clear for this evening. Partly cloudy. Overnight lows mid-60s. Coastal flood advisory in effect from 8 p.m. this evening till 2 a.m. on Thursday. On Thursday, it'll be partly sunny in the morning, then cloudy with a chance of showers and some thunderstorms. Highs in the mid to upper 70s. More rainy weather on Thursday night. Nighttime lows mid-60s. Friday, a chance of showers in the morning, then partly sunny with our highs in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media. WVOX, WVIP.
It's your favorite time of the year.
Summer!
And this is your favorite station.
I love it.
AM 1460, WVOX.
WVOX.
Now, back
to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. I'm chatting with my guest, Mr. Bert Solomon of the National Journal, who's written a fascinating account of FDR's so-called court packing effort in 1937 called FDR versus the Constitution. It was defeated by the U.S. Senate on this day 72 years ago. I had said 73 years earlier. I added a year. That's what happens when you get a little older. Before the break, I posed this question to Bert. Was this a very good or a very bad idea, and what were the immediate consequences?
Well, I wound up thinking that it was a very bad idea. And the reason, the winning argument in my mind was not so much the dictatorship question, though that was part of it, but it was the notion of setting a precedent, and that if Roosevelt had succeeded in expanding the size of the court because his party controlled Congress, then every time after that, that a president's party controlled Congress and the court was giving them a hard time, they could fix it, quote-unquote. Well, I mean, at the time, the Democratic opponents of this said, you know, suppose it was Hoover and Coolidge who was in this problem, in this situation. They would have expanded the court. In my mind, I was thinking, well, I started this while George W. Bush was president with a Republican Congress who basically would do whatever he wanted. And I was thinking, you know, if the courts tried to stand in his way, they would just expand it. And so, you know, George W. Bush could have expanded the court. Barack Obama could expand the court with his Democratic majority. And there is a cost to having this keel, this kind of lagging indicator. But I think that the cost is less than the cost of not having it.
It's a very good point, and we have had a tradition of checks and balances, obviously, throughout this country. We know in desperate times, the Civil War, the Depression and World War II, presidents are usually given some leeway. You know, they're given some extra special powers, in a sense, to deal with the emergencies, and most people feel it. The problem is, if you throw the baby out with the bathwater, as you said, and you establish a precedent of changing the size of the court, and can come back to bite you very severely. No question about it.
It can, and I think it also would have changed the nature of the court. Every time that the court would have a controversial decision to make, it would be thinking about the next election. And I think one of the results, the happy results of Roosevelt losing this fight, is that the court felt pretty empowered, you know, and pretty indestructible. And it gave it the self-confidence to do bold things,
right,
including the Warren Court. I mean, that might have happened anyway. But when the court stopped President Truman from seizing the steel mills in 1952, when it forced President Nixon to turn over the Watergate tapes in 1974, when it blocked over a wartime president's objections, when it required constitutional protections for the terrorist suspects at Guantanamo Bay in 2004 and 2008, arguably none of those would have happened if Roosevelt had won this fight and the court was even more a political institution than it, of course, already is.
No question about it. It's a very interesting discussion because the delicate balance that we have is important. Unfortunately, throughout our history, we have seen with this delicate balance, call it even checks and balances of the three branches, very little has been done except in emergency periods. And that has, I think, hurt us. And we've been very lucky. We've been prosperous so long and we've dodged so many bullets. You know, almost immediately after the president's announcement of this plan, which had been only reviewed by his attorney general, Homer S. Cummings, we mentioned him. He was the subject of a wonderful film with Dana Andrews called Boomerang. There was a storm of protest in the editorial boards of most newspapers on the campuses of some of the best private colleges and on the floor of the Senate. Senator Bert Wheeler from Montana, a liberal New Dealer, led the fight against the plan. Why did this known liberal and vocal opponent of the conservative court turn against FDR?
Well, he was worried about dictatorship. He was worried about a president controlling the instruments of justice. Mm. And he had good reason to be. Later on, he became an isolationist and was known as a conservative, and in fact is one of the villains in Philip Roth's book, The Plot Against America. But early on, for most of his career, he was this amazingly progressive, liberal sort of guy.
Yeah, well, he was part of the Western class of Democrats. Yeah. They were much different from the Southern Jim Crow Democrats and the big city Northeast, you know, the machine Democrats.
And his role in Montana politics was to basically be a strong and virulent opponent of what they called the company, which is Anaconda Copper,
right,
which controlled all of the politics and most of the newspapers and a lot of the justice of Montana. And he was in when and he also when he got to the Senate, he was almost lynched because he would not prosecute the Wobblies and the union guys back during the Palmer, you know,
Red Scare
days, right, without sufficient evidence, even though the company really wanted him to do that.
Right.
When he got elected to the Senate in the early 20s, he went after the Teapot Dome scandal, and he forced the Attorney General out of office. Well, when the Attorney General of the United States had to leave office, but some of his loyalists were left behind in the Justice Department, they went after Wheeler, and they got him indicted on and tried on bogus charges twice, once in Montana in federal court and once in Washington, and went after him, though he was acquitted. So he had reason to fear that in the executive branch, if they, you know, have control of the powers of justice in their hands, will abuse it.
Mm. Who was Joe Robinson, and how important was he to FDR's effort, and what happened to him?
He was the majority leader from the state of Arkansas, and was actually a very good and interesting majority leader. He was considered, he was thought to be kind of a conservative, and he wasn't really conservative except on matters of race because he had to get reelected in Arkansas, but was instrumental in leading the New Deal through Congress. He had a lot of influence with his colleagues, and in fact, he would always have the really correct vote counts in his head because there would always be a few senators who totally trusted. He was totally a man of his word. His handshake was golden.
Sure.
And so they would tell him the truth about their leanings in a way that they wouldn't necessarily tell the Roosevelt White House.
And he died relatively right in the midst of this battle.
He died at the climax of this. And quite suddenly, he was very overweight. He was not in good shape. It was a very hot summer in Washington in 1937. He lived in a kind of an airless room in an apartment, a little funny building called the Methodist Building, which is still there. And it's right between the Supreme Court and the old Senate office building. And I actually got up in the course of this. I sort of wangled my way into the room where one night he had sort of chest pains while he was presiding over the Senate. He went home. His wife was in Arkansas, you know, because a brother had died. And one night he just had a heart attack. He was reading the congressional record in bed, got out of bed, took one step, collapsed on the floor, was only found the next morning, and the possibility that Roosevelt could have engineered a victory probably died with him.
You know, we're coming to a break, and a short break, and I assume that if he would have lived, I know there's been a lot of speculation that it's possible that Roosevelt could have engineered. We have to go to a short break. Bert, I want to remind our audience, you're listening to WVOX 1460, live streaming WVOX.com. My guest is Mr. Bert Solomon. We're talking about his book, FDR versus the Constitution, FDR's attempt to enlarge the court. And we're going to go to a short break. I'll be back in a minute or two.
get overheated this summer, cool down with us.
Completely refreshing and so delicious.
AM 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. A victory for gun control advocates. The Senate just now rejecting an amendment to a key defense bill. The measure would have allowed
anyone licensed to carry a concealed firearm in their own state to do so in most other states. Democrats taking aim at it.
Is it so important that everybody carry a gun everywhere, or do we want to respect state rights?
Senator Dick Durbin.
Fox Radio's Chris Barnes, the amendment sponsored by Republican John Thune. President Obama keeps up his call for health care reform legislation with a primetime address tonight.
Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins says President Obama is going to need to reach out to Republicans if he wants health care reform to happen. Collins and California Democrat Dianne Feinstein share a concern about the cost of the reforms.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz and officials with the Drug Enforcement Agency reportedly searching the Houston clinic of one doctor who treated Michael Jackson. Dr. Conrad Murray was Jackson's personal physician and with him when he died. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After two decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, in recent years, switched to Excel for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them, too, for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels, 576-9797.
WVOX is the station that never sleeps. Hello, I'm Judy Fremont, president of the station, with information you'll want to know about. If you want your message on the air immediately, our Whitney Media sales team is there for you 24-7. Call us anytime, day or night, at 914-636-1460 and ask for our sales team. We'll get back to you right away. 914-636-1460, the station that never sleeps. 914-636-1460.
No matter what your summer plans are,
barbecue, play softball,
we are right there with you. AM 1460 WVOX.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates with Bert Solomon. We're talking about something that happened 72 years ago today, the end of the court fight, FDR attempting to expand the Supreme Court. I'm talking to Bert Solomon, who's written a fascinating book that really goes into the in-depth of the background of it. Bert, after this rancorous battle which divided America and weakened the New Deal, did Roosevelt, in fact, win the war after losing the battle?
Yes, he actually did, because he got the court that he wanted. He had wanted a liberal court that would see a, you know, what was called a living constitution, that would change as the society needed it to change. And he, in fact, got that. But he got it without actually appointing anybody.
Right.
And what happened was, in the middle of this fight, the court switched sides. And the court switched sides because the swing vote, this Philadelphia corporate lawyer, Owen Roberts, he switched sides.
Right.
Now, afterwards, Roosevelt and Cummings patted themselves on the back because they thought that it was this proposal that they had made which had pushed Roberts across the divide. And he started voting with the liberals from then on.
You know,
and actually, it wasn't.
Right. You know, it's interesting that, of course, many believe that with the death of Lewis Howe, Roosevelt would not have embarked this. That was his confidant. That was his political advisor for many years. Maybe Roosevelt didn't have someone to sound this against to, because it was a period in between where Lewis Howe had died.
in late 35 before the election, and really the emergence of Harry Hopkins as his, you know, one of his pivotal advisors. You know, tell us his role of Roberts and how he immediately affected this change. And what was the saying mean, a switch in time that saved nine?
In June or May 1936, the Supreme Court knocked down by a 5-4 vote a New York State law setting a minimum wage for women.
Mm.
Now, almost the exact same law from Washington State came before the court a few months later. And the court heard arguments and then did a preliminary vote in December, which is, you know, 6-7 months later of 1936, right after the election, but several weeks before Roosevelt's court packing proposal was made public. And Roberts changed his mind. He switched sides. Mm. They didn't announce that decision for a few months later because one of the liberal justices was sick and they didn't want it to be a 4-4 vote. They wanted to set a new precedent, which required the 5th vote.
Right.
And so Roberts had already changed his mind from the New York State case to the Washington State case. And from then on, through the spring of 1937, when important cases came before the court, Roberts voted with the liberals and upheld the New Deal. Mm. And so upheld the Wagner Act, which allowed unions to collect, or workers to collectively bargain,
right,
and upheld Social Security, which was not only elderly pensions, but at the time was also the vehicle for unemployment benefits.
Sure.
And so Roberts switched sides, but he never wrote any of the opinions, and he never really explained why he switched sides.
Mm.
But I can go into that later too if you want, because I think I've, you know, sort of figured out what he was doing. But the upshot at the time was that, and this is where the humorists in Washington, such as they are, called the switch in time that saved nine, you know, from the old Ben Franklin maxim. That because the court was doing what the president and a majority of the electorate wanted in terms of upholding the New Deal, why did they have to run the risk of packing it? Why
Sure.
not just leave it aside as it was? And that, I think, was crucial in saving the nine and saving the court as it stood there.
At least certainly the structure, the physical structure of it. What happened to the makeup of the court, and what were the long-term consequences of the Roberts swing vote, and what happened to these justices in pretty short order after that?
Well, during this fight, one of the conservative justices announced his resignation, and then in the next few years, the other ones did too. One of the ironies of this is that they might have actually already done that if Roosevelt hadn't attacked the court, because then they felt that they couldn't resign because it would look like they were turning tail when Roosevelt, you know, was attacking them. So his action might have actually delayed the usual workings of Father Time. But what happened was the court from then on, and somewhat to this day, I mean, it's still, you know, teeter-tottering on the back of Justice Anthony Kennedy now, who's a swing vote, the court entered into this liberal era that led, I think, fairly directly to the Warren Court and Brown v. Board of Education and the Miranda rights and the whole, you know, panoply of social progress that the Warren Court produced, and even to things like Roe v. Wade, that it produced a court that was willing to look at the Constitution and be... It's really interesting about how justices make up their mind.
Mm.
Somebody wrote in 1941, a scholar, that there's 6,000 words in the Constitution, but only 150 of them matter in terms of, you know, constitutional interpretation. And a lot of them are words that, you know, liberty, general welfare, that, you know, can mean one thing to one person and one thing to another, and a different thing to another, and they're all legit.
Right.
And so it's how does a justice say, you know, what does liberty mean? Well, you know, Roberts seemed to change on what he meant by liberty.
Right. You know, it's, and of course, even the right to bear arms. They had a vote today in the Senate today.
All sorts of other words.
Right, exactly. In other words, is this the state having the right, a militia having a right, an individual having a gun in their home, limiting, you know, we don't allow people to have howitzers and hand grenades, even though it's a right to bear arms, of course. You know, we have just listened to the vetting process and almost universally expect the confirmation of a new justice to the Supreme Court coming up in the next few weeks. Has the selection and vetting process changed much since FDR's time? And what about Hugo Black's hidden background? That would certainly come out today.
That would certainly come out today. Back then, almost nobody, no prospective or nominated justice ever had a hearing.
Mm.
It just wasn't done. It had happened once in the 20s. And I think it hadn't happened at all otherwise.
And Brandeis certainly, I know, was under pressure. He was very criticized, that nominee. But I don't think there was a hearing on that.
No, I mean, they just didn't do hearings.
Right.
But and Hugo Black, Roosevelt actually made some of the same mistakes in appointing Hugo Black, which was just weeks after this court fight ended. Some of the same mistakes he had made in the court fight, which is not talking to anybody except his attorney general. And so he sprung the nomination of Hugo Black. Well, what he didn't know, but some people around him did, and certainly senators did, because Hugo Black then was a senator from Alabama, is that he had belonged to the Ku Klux Klan and possibly was a lifetime member and possibly had appeared in Klan regalia while he was running for the Senate in Alabama.
Right.
This was not known until after he was confirmed and sworn in, and he and his wife went off to Europe that August. And then it was learned, and he had to, you know, go on national radio, and they had to just sort of, you know, bully their way through.
And he wound up being one of the most liberal judges,
exactly.
Ironically. So you never know. You know, in retrospect, FDR selected many new justices, and in his remaining time in the White House, the court seemed to change significantly for many decades. In the closing minutes, you know, in a sense, did FDR learn something from this fight about being a more effective leader? Or how did you see this as significant trends towards where the court went in the future?
Well, he did learn something from it. And I say not immediately, because he made the same mistakes in nominating Hugo Black. But he really did learn, it seems, that if you are a leader, your first obligation is to make sure that people are following.
Sure.
Not ask more of people than they are willing to do.
Right.
He seemed to overreach in this. Now, he learned this, and it was very useful for the nation in bringing the nation, which did not want another world war, in preparing them for the war that was soon to take over.
Mm.
And in my mind, he did this brilliant half measure, the Lend-Lease program in 1941, to make sure that Great Britain got some of our war materiel, but in a way that we didn't actually have to directly sell it to them, because he knew that the public wouldn't buy it.
Right.
And so he really was able to lead by making sure that people were following and by not asking more than they could give.
And, you know, Bert, in the final few seconds, do you see another appointment in the near future coming up?
Justice Stevens is 89.
And Ginsburg, too, has not been well.
Ginsburg is in her 70s and not well, but she seems okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to know.
It'll be very interesting. I think this could be President Obama's boldest choice. I don't think you may see a return, more to the Senate. You know, we're running out of time. I want to thank Bert Salmon. This was a fascinating hour. I mean, we could spend a whole day on this. But joining us this afternoon on WVUX, The Advocates. For more information about his book, please go to the book site at www.walkerbooks.com. Thank you, Bert, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It was great. It's always informative to learn about these things. Next week, I'll be hosting Jay Rosenberg and Mal Gissin, and we'll be discussing surviving in the new American economy. If you want to hear any of these archived Advocate broadcasts, you can access them at http://advocates-wvox.com. Thank you. Have a great day, and thanks a lot to Bert Salmon.
You've been listening. listening to The Advocates on 1460 WVOX. The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Tune in again next Wednesday at noon for The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX.